You're listening to Within Our Reach, a podcast by Reachability Association that focuses on accessibility, inclusion, and leveling the playing field at work and in your community. My name is Blake Hunsley, and my co-host is Shelley Allward-McLeod, and today we're joined by Reachability's Building on Self-Awareness and Self-Confidence facilitator, Emery Parsons. In today's episode, we'll be focusing our conversation around an article entitled DEI Needs to Include Socioeconomic Diversity by Maya Richard Craven, which appeared in the February 2024 edition of Forbes magazine. A link to the article will be included in the show notes. Enjoy the episode.
Well, thanks for that wonderful introduction. I'm Shelley, and I'm here with my co-host Blake and today's guest, Emery. Thanks for joining us, Emery. It's always delightful to hear your perspective on things, and we're so glad you're here. Why don't you take this opportunity to introduce yourself?
Hello, hello. My name is Emery. I am a facilitator here at Reachability. I facilitate BOSS, which is a self-management program, and I'm so excited to talk about this article.
We're excited to have you here. Thank you for coming in.
Exactly. So, Emery, I know that you and I talked before the session today, and you've had an opportunity to really look into the article, and we were talking about like statistics. Mm-hmm. So what was your initial takeaway? And I think you might want to talk about some of those statistics.
Yeah, I think Maya, the author, really hit the mark with this entire article. When I went to find some stats on Canada, because this is based in the US, what she wrote, I found here that statistically within the Black community in Canada, 15% were living in low-income conditions, and that is a higher percentage than any other non-racialized population. So that is a huge portion that you're leaving out when you're not talking about them in DEI situations.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's great. As always, I love the fact that you get right into And I want to just get this right out there at the beginning, because I think this is important for us to address right away, is the whole piece on tokenism. You know, I hear so much like when, you know, boards or companies are wanting to hire people that it's a tokenism issue. What are your thoughts around that?
I think it's very obvious when somebody's being tokenized, right? Hey, Charles, why don't you sit in on our meeting? We'll have the camera set up so that we take a bunch of photos of you and put it up on the website, right? But we don't allow you to speak the entire meeting. That is a perfect example of we just wanted you there to make the room a bit more racialized, right? And so when you are incorporating that into a DEI situation, and you are just pushing these racialized people into a group just so that you're checking off a box, it's a really bad look.
It is. And it, I'm so happy you said that and that we're having this like conversation, because I actually see that. You see that often on conference panels where you have, you know, somebody from another race, another group, who's sitting at the table and they've never been asked a question.
Nope.
It's as though they're a mannequin that's been just placed there for the photo opportunity. And that for me is, I'm like, when's that person speaking?
Yeah.
It's very noticeable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to talk because that to me is very important. So one of the things that we see here, and I'd like to really get your thoughts on this, is how do you think the lack of focus on the socioeconomic diversity impacts the DEI movement? What are your thoughts on that?
I think when you make a commitment to put together a DEI committee, you are making a commitment to be an ally for so many different groups of people. And when it comes to DEI, intersectionality should be your biggest focus, right? Somebody or one person doesn't just check off one box. Right. For myself, I have anxiety. I'm a woman and I'm Black. So I'm checking off multiple boxes. And if I'm just focusing on one, I mean, I'm leaving out really big aspects of myself.
Right.
So low income communities, when they're being left out, you are removing a lot of voices and you are not hitting the mark with what your intention should be.
Exactly. Your statistic of 15%, you know, I want to circle back to that. If we think just in the sort of hiring, because hiring seems to be for workplaces such a big topic, hiring, that's 15% of the population mm-hmm. that we're not talking to.
Yeah.
Right. If we're putting together a focus group on building a new school, a new community center, and we're not specifically talking, that's 15% of the population that mm-hmm. will be likely users.
Yeah.
Of that program or space that we're not talking and to. That's a big number.
Yeah. And with low income families, oftentimes there's a stigma around it, right? It's frowned upon. Oh, you came from a poor family. What does that mean for your career, right? Will you be able to see eye to eye with people who, you know, came up in a privileged family? So it oftentimes is brushed under the rug because it's embarrassing to talk about. So why bring it up, right? But it needs to be talked about because there are struggles and barriers that these people have faced growing up that made them stronger. So I want to share another stat that I found because God knows I love stats.
I'm so glad you did stat homework.
So on Future Outlook, so despite persistent challenges that the Black population have encountered, this population demonstrates resilience and continuous upward trends in both employment and education. So in 2022, the stats were 72.5% that marked hopeful when it comes to the future versus the other part of the population, the rest, which was only 64.1. So despite all those barriers that they faced, they still have so much potential and they have this eagerness to get out there, you know? So removing that voice it's really sad.
Do you find too, when people are talking about DEI and they're leaving out the economics of it, I find it really disingenuous. I find it very hard to trust a person who's talking as if they have my community's best interests at heart when they're disregarding, honestly, what is probably some of the biggest struggles on the day-to-day. If you can't put food on your table, it's very hard to focus on, you know, it's very hard to focus on the merits of belonging, for example, if I can't actually feed my family. So I find it harder to take some DEI professional seriously if they are, especially someone who, and you know, don't judge a book by its cover, but mm-hmm. If somebody's presenting as someone who has a privileged background,
yeah,
I find it much harder to take them seriously. Right. It's a big gap for me.
Yeah. Oh, me too. Right. There's already this idea of how easy it was for them growing up. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah.
Not to negate other challenges, right. But yeah, we're such a money-oriented society, we are, for better or for worse, that, yeah, other problems start to pale in comparison. And that just may be for me. I'm not a Black Canadian, so I can't mm-hmm. speak to that. Is it a battle between the two, I guess? Is it a matter of prioritizing? Can we prioritize both? Or does it seem like if you're not prioritizing the economics of it, that maybe people feel like you don't have a right to be focusing mm-hmm. on the other things because you're missing something so mm-hmm. key?
I think, well, with DEI, you should be focusing on everyone. So that means including the people that grew up in middle or upper class and also lower class. And that's not hard to do, right? We're not asking to kick somebody out of the group or the book club. We're just asking for everybody to have a voice on the panel.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that I think we miss as well, and I, again, because I don't come from the Black community, and I did grow up in a privileged background. So it's only because of having these kind of open conversations that I find out more about what's happening in the world. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I've heard just here in our city of Halifax, or HRM, or whatever we're supposed to call it.
Greater Dartmouth okay. We'll allow it.
I know. Those of us that live in Dartmouth do like to say we live in Dartmouth. But I've heard from, you know, people that live in communities that are a bit outside of the city that they're very eager, okay, to participate. they don't have the means to participate. And right. It is a social economic. Mm-hmm. The bus system doesn't go out to their community.
Yeah.
Right. Or the bus system operates on a pattern that's not going to be conducive for them right. to participate. And we don't think about that. It's not that they don't want to participate. It's not that people don't want to participate. We often haven't thought about that. They're in a lot of cases, I've heard that many, you know, communities that are underserved by many things, grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, what are your thoughts on that? How do we do a better job on that?
Well, I think an example is the clientele that I work with. I myself did not come from a low income. I came from a middle class family. But I work with people that come from low income housing families, right? And so I have to be understanding. I have to educate myself so that I can meet them where they are now and not expect them to meet me, right? And that makes all the difference. It's me, you know, removing whatever bias or judgment that I have towards people that come from low income families mm-hmm. and just focus on, okay, what do you need right now to make it easier?
Absolutely.
This actually brings up a question I had while reading the article. Something that I wrote the quote down here from the article was, it was some advice they were giving about engaging different economic groups in DEI meetings. And it was business leaders can start with including people who are currently low income in DEI conversations, workshops, meetings, conferences, and committees. Now, you're talking about some of the work you do to make yourself more relatable, I guess, mm-hmm. to clients in low income situations. Business leaders, like, I mean, you work for a nonprofit. Yeah. You're a very empathetic person. You're in a position where you help people every day. I don't want to slag off all business leaders, but I think a lot of big business leaders in particular wouldn't necessarily have the skills naturally to approach someone in a low economic situation in a tactful, delicate, helpful way. So what sort of practical advice would you give to somebody who maybe is from a privileged background, is, say, running a company, but they want to do the right thing? They want to start bringing everybody into the conversation. How can they do that in a way that's respectful?
I think the word that pops up is trust, right? And it can be hard when you have these big, scary business people that are seeking this demographic that just naturally don't mesh together, honestly, really. So, for example, if you have a very large business in the center of the city and someone who comes from a very poor family, say a Black individual, walks in, and looks around and sees no other Black people, no other Black people mm-hmm. of power in charge, they're not going to feel comfortable in that space. So why would they stick around? Uh-huh. Right. So I think for your question, if there is somebody who is in a, you know, a business role or a managing role seeking these low income voices, I think the first thing that they should do is to integrate themselves in communities that they otherwise haven't already. So that means going out, right? Mm. Leave the office, go take a trip to a community and listen. Keyword, listen.
I was going to say, I think that's advice I hear a lot and see not so taken, sadly, right? But it's very important. Yes.
That doesn't mean you going to a poor community and giving a presentation that's so tone deaf, right? It just mm-hmm. means going to a community and just asking them, I want to hear from you.
I think that's key, because while you were saying that, I was actually envisioning, oh, they're going to go out to the community center and tell the people what they need.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm here to give you this or to help with this, without actually asking what supports.
Yeah,
you know, how can I help you? What, you know, what? How can we make it more inclusive for you?
I sat in a meeting I sat in a meeting once here in Halifax, and it was, I don't remember why this gentleman was here in town, but he was an MP from out in Alberta. I'll leave you to guess the party affiliation when we're off mic. It should be nice and obvious. But this was probably 10 years ago. So it was when a lot of people were going out west for work. Our economy's never been super strong here, but at the time it was even worse. And so he came and he was talking to a political science class I was in. That's why he was here. And his advice was that he didn't understand why we weren't all thrilled at the concept of moving to Alberta for work. we could make so much money. Just came into this group and had no concept of our community identity, no concept of why we would want to stay here in our home and build our communities. His advice was just to come in and say, you could make money by getting the hell away from everyone you know and love. And I've never found anyone so tone deaf in my life, but but that's what it would feel like, having someone come in from, you know, their boardroom and coming in and saying, you can be rich too. Like, no, you're right. They need to come and sit and not talk would be the best advice, I think.
Yeah. Let's not put people who have never experienced that type of thing in their lives and talk for the people that has. It's a really bad look.
Well, this was 10 years ago and I can still remember it like it was yesterday. It stuck with me that much. So yes. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And trust, you know, back to, you know, the thing that you said as well, Amory, about trust. I think that is important. And trust starts with finding one little way that we can talk to each other. Right. And you're right. Coming into an organization or going to a conference or going to anywhere, right? Where nobody looks like you.
Yeah.
Right. Doesn't matter whether you're Black, Indigenous, you know, you have a visible disability. When nobody looks like you, you're not really sure. You don't trust that they understand who you are. You don't trust that they want you to be included. So I think that's really important. That's a good takeaway for our listeners today to think about that is trust. And we talk about that whole genuineness. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what's the curiosity? Like, why, Mr. CEO, right? Are you going to that community? What's your intent?
Yeah, that type of thing cannot be faked.
Right.
It's so obvious.
It's so obvious. And you can tell when somebody's be authentic and when they're just putting on a show. Uh-huh. You can truly see it because afterwards, you know, there'll be the little whispers. Oh, my gosh, that was horrible. Mm-hmm. Why'd he come here?
and doesn't stop to talk. Like, now you've said that, you've put it in my head. I almost wished we were like on video because this is one of those times where I want to demonstrate, like the person walking in, they walk in and they walk past everybody to the chair at the front of the room where they're sitting. Well,
because that's where they naturally belong in their mind. And it's so apparent.
Yeah. When in fact, the people who are really good, and we'll talk about inclusive leadership in other sessions, but you know, the person who walks in and who has genuine curiosity stops at the door.
Yeah.
Right. And usually the session's ready to start and somebody actually has to go get that person because they're so busy talking and having genuine conversation with everybody.
Yeah.
So that by the time that person gets to that chair at the front of the room to do their presentation or whatever the conversation is going to be, they've already bought some credibility, right? People were now willing to listen as opposed to the,
well, here we go.
Uh-huh. This is a suit.
Well, and even in the article, just to get back to, you're talking about people who don't, in particular, who don't look like you, or let's broaden and say aren't a member of your in-group,
right,
coming in and it feels sort of like lecturing. And then they talked in the article too about even when someone is a member of your in-group and they come in and they may resemble you, they may share certain elements of your culture, but it's so very rarely someone who grew up in a low economic situation. It's almost always a person of privilege. So I'm kind of torn on this. Is that necessarily a bad thing out of the gate? Or does somebody, say you have someone from your cultural in-group who has made it wealthy and started in a low economic situation, is there almost an onus on that person to be the person leading the engagement? Do they owe something to their community, do you think?
I think some people would argue yes and some people would argue no. I mean, if you choose that, okay, I know where I came from, I'm going to give back to my community because I've built myself up so much that I'm able to now, then that is rewarding. That would make them feel good, right? Mm. And if they, as long as they're not gloating about it, here, look at me.
You too can be this great.
Right?
Authentic.
Just pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It works for me.
Yeah.
No, I think that seems to be a bit of a take on it, because One of the things that the article talks about is when we're just focusing on race or gender or sexual orientation, right? Mm-hmm. We're often missing the boat on the social economic. Uh-huh. And I know here, you know, we've been talking about, you know, the Black community, mm-hmm. right? But that's also putting a bit of a stigma on the fact that everybody from the Black community is from a low income, right? In this article, she was really driving home the, you know, some of those pieces of true DEI mm-hmm. and tokenism,
yeah.
but forcing us to come back to social economic, because there's people from all, you know, diverse backgrounds, right, that are likely in a low mm-hmm. income situation.
Yeah, I did a presentation at a conference once about the importance of literacy in low socioeconomic communities. And the feedback I got was so appreciative because it wasn't talked about enough. And I outlined the importance of literacy in the doors that it will open for you. Yes. Right, something so small as to learning how to read fluently mm-hmm. or how to write beautifully, right? That's a huge, huge skill that can take you a long way. And oftentimes in low-income communities, it's forgotten about. Yes. It's not so important.
And that's right? A stigma. You talked before a bit about a stigma or embarrassed. Literacy is one of those biggest things where people often in, you know, poverty level have not had an opportunity to maybe finish school, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And therefore their level of reading
right.
to do sometimes things like fill out an application
absolutely.
Form.
Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it's things that are so out of their control, like their right. schooling was not good enough
correct.
And did not care enough mm-hmm. for their success. Or they had to leave school early to help mom and dad pay the bills, right? There are barriers that they had more yeah. important things to take care of than learning how to read and write, which is sad.
Okay.
Very. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that this is really shedding a light on a topic, both from a diversity point of view, but thinking of diversity, mm-hmm. okay, not just from our cultural background, but thinking of diversity also perhaps from a social economic, which is one of the reasons why I was really excited to talk about this topic, because I think it can cover people in multiple groups, right?
It affects everyone.
Right. So, and probably there's probably leaders who are still trying to find their way in the DEI saying, what? There's now another thing that I need to think of.
God, haven't I done enough?
Right. And I get that, but I also think it's another piece of our unconscious bias.
Yeah. And I love what Maya wrote here. Caring about DEI should go beyond your 9-to-5 job. Impactful DEI efforts involve being an ally 365 days of the year.
Which I think we need to add the caveat that we acknowledge that can be so hard and so exhausting for yeah. so many people. It really can, especially when so many people are going home to, let's be honest, families, sometimes significant others who really don't buy into some yeah. of the core concepts of DEI. It can be really difficult. I find too, there's an argument that I've been hearing a lot where we get focused on certain elements of DEI, and then people will say, well, you know, the economics of it, poverty affects every group that you're talking about. And they almost start to get mad that you're focusing on, you know, and I'm using air quotes on an audio podcast, excuse me, but focus on the unimportant things, that you're not focusing on the things that are truly important. So my question is, should we be focused more on lifting everybody just by focusing on the economics of it? Or is each group that we're talking about, are our needs so different that we really can't just focus on one broad thing in an attempt to lift all boats, as they say?
I think you would be kind of a shortcut to lift everyone equally because everybody has their own needs and necessities, right? I think that comes back to equity versus equality.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. I find it a lazy argument personally, but I hear it a lot. I swear, anytime you hear someone who's supposed to be representing the economic left, especially politically, talking about any sort of cultural inequality, you get someone who rolls their eyes and just says, can you please talk about the minimum wage? Just, okay, we can walk, talk, and chew gum at the same time, and it's important that we try. So no, I'm glad you agreed. Thank you.
Yeah.
I thought I was on the wrong track there, so that's good.
DEI is complicated.
Yes.
And it is tiring.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about that. It's tiring. It's exhausting being an ally because you have to consider a lot of different factors. Mm-hmm. Intersectionality is very complex.
Very. And I think our viewers, like, I guess they're looking at their, you know, screen, but they're not actually seeing us.
For a nice walk, I'm sure they are.
But our listeners today.
Out on a trail.
I think that's important. Like, we are recognizing that this is a lot of work. It's not something that's going to end. There is a lot of heavy lifting that needs to happen by everybody. And I think in different areas at different times. Mm-hmm. And I think it requires on everybody's part a lot of self-reflection.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
On, you know, self-reflection for me personally. Okay. What do I know? What do I don't know? Right. Which is a lot, right? That I don't know. And then going into that, if I'm sitting on a corporate, you know, head table, right? And talking about from a DEI perspective, what does our organization want to do? We're likely not going to do every single thing, you know, and to think that we're going to meet every single need by the end of the year is unrealistic and just crazy. Right. But for our organization, based on who we are and who we serve in the community or should be serving in the community, what perhaps could we be doing? And it may very well be that we're in a position to support, you know, food insecurity. Yeah. It might be that we're in a position to be supporting employment programs for underprivileged areas, educational needs, right? So I think if everybody was able to, you know, think about it and self-reflect from personally, but also organizationally, where should we really be?
I think you should focus on the things that you can do.
Correct.
And stop trying to do things that you know you can't.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Because it's going to fail and it's going to look really bad.
Yep. And that's probably where we are. That's probably where we get to some of the things of tokenism even, right? It's not, I'm sure it's not intentional to hurt somebody's feelings, right? Or to coming across as rude and disrespectful, but it's people thinking I have to do something in every area.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Right. When that's not true.
We
do need to do something, but it may not be appropriate at the time.
Right.
We talk about the concept around here sometimes of rejecting the good for the perfect because we want a solution that's going to lift everybody. We want to fix all problems at one time. And well, this only helps this one group. So that's not good enough. In my opinion, we really need to get away from that. Help where you can should be our mantra. If everyone helped where we can, everyone's going to be helping little areas. Yeah. But
exactly. And being an ally doesn't mean that you have to be perfect.
No.
You're going to make mistakes.
And you don't have to be a free consultant is another thing we talk around here a lot. It's not, in my head, it's not quite as bad as tokenism, but it's not that far away. Like, and I'm sure, tell me if this has happened to you, but I can tell just by looking at the expression on your face that it has. You know, you're not necessarily being tokenized in that you're being put in the front of the room and going, wow, look at Emery. Aren't we diverse?
Yeah.
No, you're being asked every question as if you are the font of all Black Canadian knowledge.
Right.
And you're not being compensated for that time. That's the part that drives me crazy, especially when we're talking about engaging people from low economic communities. Great. Pay them. Pay them for their knowledge, time, and expertise.
Yeah, I've been asked questions before where it was pertaining to like the Black community. And I looked at them and I said, I have no idea what you're asking me right now because I don't speak for the entire Black community in Canada. That's impossible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I have my own lived experiences. I can say that I was privileged enough to not live in a low income house. Mm-hmm. I came from an upper middle class home. And I'm so thankful for that. And I'm able to recognize that my upbringings are different from those who didn't experience that.
Correct.
So I'm not going to speak for people who grew up in low income housing.
Uh-huh.
Right. That's not my place.
Well, and thank you for saying that. I think that's important for our listeners to hear that everybody's lived experience is different.
Yeah.
Like, that's one key point. And the other point about this whole perfectionism that I always like to remind people. People say, Shelley, you're just so rudely reminding me every day that I'm not perfect. And you're not. I'm not perfect. And we're never going to be perfect. Uh-huh. It's a continuous learning cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Absolutely. So important to remember.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's part of what holds us back in the DEI sphere from talking about economics more and poverty more and engaging with people from low economic backgrounds is, I don't know if we're afraid that we're going to embarrass people by talking about money. We seem to think talking about money, especially if you haven't historically had it, is shameful. In my very socialist opinion, it's shameful. We allow our society to operate where some people don't have money. But
right.
I think we really need to get away from both ends of it, really taking pride in your economic success. I could do with a lot less of that, but also of allowing this shame, this feeling of shame around poverty to perpetuate. It's I don't want to say it's never the fault of anyone who's in a low economic situation, but it's very rarely the fault.
Because the focus, I think sometimes it's not so much on the economy that you're living in. It's so much as what didn't you do that you were able to provide for?
How did you not try?
Right.
Yeah.
Let's totally forget the state of the economy right now. Uh-huh. Why aren't you trying hard enough?
Right now or historically, and who's been allowed to participate and who hasn't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And let's come back to a point that Emery made, you know, before is, you know, showcasing, you know, people from underserved communities that have had success. Okay. There's a difference in showcasing, you know, like building them up versus, you know, them. I think, how did you say it? Unless they're, what was the word you used? Unless they're being conceited or about, you know, like.
Yeah.
About what they've done. Oh, bragging. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm like a millionaire now. Why can't you do that? Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Like that, I think is the difference, right? Mm-hmm. Like when, you know, I don't think it's, you know, everybody has like their differences of opinions, obviously. But I don't have a problem with talking about money per se, but I wouldn't ever, okay, talk about like how much I have versus how much you don't have, right? I'm happy to talk about, you know, if people want to know, like, what can I do, you know, to get some of the things that they perceive I have, right? Which is also sometimes a wrong perception as well, right? We all have different perceptions, but I think, you know, it's, you need to be careful about how you talk about money. Right. And, you know, we often have perceptions. Well, that person drives this car. They must have a lot of money. That person lives in this house. They must have a lot of money.
Or even
they could be one day away from it getting taken away.
Yeah.
Too, my mother always said that. Do not make assumptions about how people are living. They could be driving this fancy, fancy car. And they are in so much debt.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
And it's the same. And we look at certain groups, like people asking you, oh, what about poverty in the Black community? Why am I expected to know? Like, it's not every person in this community that is having to deal with that.
Right. And, yeah.
So, Emery, this has been a very lively conversation. And as always, it's a bit time to wrap up. We didn't have any questions from our viewers or listeners, but why don't you give us sort of your highlights of what could people do? What are some priorities that people can be doing to be more cognizant, if you will, of these socioeconomic circumstances? Yeah.
I think the first thing is self-awareness. Let's be self-aware people. Okay. Let's be aware of when you are hitting the mark and when you're not. So if you were putting together a DEI committee just because you're trying to think, well, how can we get all of our workers together and mingle? Well, let's create a DEI committee. And all it is everybody just having lunch together.
Uh-huh.
So realize when it's time to remove the name DEI and just call it Lunch Club, right?
Yep.
I love that.
So DEI is a commitment. It is something that you take on and it leaves with you outside of work. You bring that with you. You don't just shut the door behind you and forget about DEI altogether. So it's something that you integrate in your everyday living. Becoming an ally is an important component of being part of a DEI committee of some sort. And recognize that equity is going to be more beneficial than equality. Everybody has different needs. And being able to put your pride aside and go out into a community and say, I'm uneducated and I need to know more. I need to listen instead of, I don't need to talk. I just need to listen. Bottom line is DEI is not something that you just wake up on a random Thursday and you've accomplished it. Uh-huh. It's not going to happen.
Uh-huh. Yes, I love that.
That's a pretty good summation.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy to end on that.
Exactly. And the other takeaway that I wanted to highlight, and you didn't say it in your summation, but you had said it earlier, was that you were actually grateful, okay, for what you had, that mm-hmm. you had, upper middle class, and that you were privileged to the house that you live in. I think it is also okay. And that's not bragging. Yeah. I'm thankful every day mm-hmm. that I didn't have to worry about food security.
Uh-huh. Right.
Right. However, there, I need to recognize the thing I can do is recognize that not everybody was as fortunate or is as fortunate as me.
Yeah.
What can I do to make myself more aware of those around me? There could be, and there have been, and I was not aware enough to see it. There were people in my very close circle who were struggling with food security, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. Nope. So my ability to help in the moment was being aware. And then just in my circle, there were people I could help.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good thing, is to, recognize self. It probably does fit into your self-awareness.
Never assume. Uh-huh. Never assume.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And if you're going to someone for real honest advice and expertise from first-person experience, one last time, pay them. Pay them for their time.
Yes.
They are not your free consultant and your free all-access pass to that community.
Got it.
Perfect. It also shows a commitment. We're inviting somebody in to talk about their lived experiences, provide them with something that's real to them.
And if we're going to operate in such a money-based culture, then show them they're important to you the most base way you can, because it's the most effective.
Right.
Yeah.
Just like we have for this session here today, like we have provided donuts.
We have.
And
not only that, but I don't know about you.
And score bars for Emery's attendance at this session.
And
today.
Not only that, technically Emery and I are on the clock today. I don't know how you're being compensated.
Oh my goodness. There is no equality here.
Thanks for listening to Within Our Reach. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. If you have an idea for an episode topic you'd like us to cover, or if you'd like to join us as a guest on the podcast, reach out to us at withinourreach@reachability.org.